Eric handled the day-to-day interactions with people. After all, Lewis couldn't have them interacting with him all the time. It was too risky.
"Relax, Mr. Keller," Lewis said. "Everything is right on schedule. Have all of our agents checked in?"
"Yes."
"And have they met their quotas?"
"All except for one. Wilkes is still working his way down the coast."
Lewis nodded.
"Tell him to hurry up unless he wants to miss the boat."
"Yes, sir," Eric replied.
5. Kendra. 8 days left. Kendra and Peter rolled into the office slightly past noon. As expected, Peter was hungover and an hour late. Then traffic had been congested, with people filtering in and out of the city, not sure who to believe about the impending disasters.
"Home sweet home," Peter said, grabbing his bag from the trunk. "You won't tell Carly about last night, will you?"
Kendra shuddered.
"What did you do?"
Carly was his wife of 12 years. It wouldn't be the first time Peter had stepped out on her. And whenever they saw one another at a work function, Kendra had to bite her tongue to refrain from warning the woman about her cheating husband. His eyes went wide and he smirked.
"Jesus, I thought you were there. Never mind. I really shouldn't have had that last drink."
He rubbed his head with long fingers and Kendra rolled her eyes at him.
"You're a pig."
She entered the San Diego FBI office and saw the place was in disarray. Phones were ringing off the hook, and everyone looked exhausted.
"What's going on here?"
"I told you we should have avoided the office," Peter said.
"Shut your trap, Peter."
Kendra shoved him away and went to her office, setting her bag on her chair. Her boss waved at her through her glass wall where he stood at the coffee maker and arrived 2 minutes later with some fresh brew.
"Baker, I heard about the takedown. Good work."
He shut the door. Kendra slumped forward, resting her head on the desk.
"Bill, we were so close."
"Peter killed the bastard," she told him.
"Indeed, I read the report." "You killed someone, too. How are you handling everything?"
he asked. The truth was, she hadn't given a second thought to killing the man guarding the kidnapped girls. He deserved far worse than she gave him.
"I'm fine. I'm done with Costella. I can't do this anymore," she said.
"Baker, look, you've had a long month. Have you watched the news? I think you should travel inland. I'm taking Linda and heading with the kids to my cousin's in Houston. Our office is helping out there," he said, pulling his glasses off and folding them into his breast pocket.
He appeared every bit the government man, his pocket protector keeping his shirt free of ink blotches.
"You're leaving? What the hell, Bill? Do you really believe this?"
Kendra was incredulous.
"I do. The president has gone dark, and that tells me a lot," he whispered.
"Shit."
That did worry Kendra.
"Have you seen a file about missing persons cases in California?"
"There are thousands of those all the time. What are you asking for?"
Bill shifted uncomfortably in his seat.
"New one. Doctors, scientists, engineers, a whole bunch of them are missing. I want the case," she said.
He nodded and gave her a tight-lipped smile.
"I was given something about that. Fine, take the file, but take Peter with you."
"No, I'm doing this solo. Plus, you think he's going to stick around when his boss isn't even crazy enough to stay on the coast?"
Kendra asked.
"Good point. Stay in touch. This could be the big one. Be safe."
Bill knocked on the desk and stood up, leaving her alone in the office. A couple of minutes later, Bill's assistant dropped off a file folder along with a thumb drive. Kendra took her bag, laptop, and case details and left, noticing Peter Costello was nowhere to be found on the way out. She was relieved. Maybe, if she was lucky, she'd never have to see him again. Her blinds opened, sending dust particles dancing in the sunlight. It was hard to believe all the talk about doomsday when it was such a gorgeous California afternoon out there. Her AC kicked on as she played with the thermostat, and Kendra glanced around, seeing how sparsely furnished her place was.
A layer of grime covered everything, and she spent a few minutes cleaning up. She'd been gone for a month, so everything left in her fridge had turned. She tossed it all, setting the bag at her front step for the time being. The parking lot in her complex was mainly empty now, too, and she was realizing that things were much direr than she'd thought. She'd lived in this place for the last 5 years, ever since she'd made the move from the FBI's Financial Crimes Department to Missing Persons. The change had been significant enough that she'd convinced herself to find a new place to live, bigger than the previous one-bedroom apartment. She thought it might help her grow roots, maybe meet someone, start a family. Kendra assessed her surroundings, feeling the weight of the empty condo more than ever. One picture adorned the fireplace mantel. She picked it up, seeing her and her sister's smiling faces. Has she ever been so young, so happy, so carefree? The photo had been taken the summer before Carrie had disappeared, and Kendra couldn't keep the tears from falling as she stared at the picture.
I'm sorry, Carrie. I'm sorry that I couldn't find you. I'm sorry you had to go alone and scared. I'm sorry.
She clutched the photo to her chest and fell onto the couch, staring at the wall with a blank gaze, her vision blurred through the tears. She couldn't help her sister, but she could help the people in the file. She set the frame on the mantel, blew her nose, and decided it was time to stop feeling sorry for herself. Soon, fresh coffee was brewing, and Kendra called the Thai place up the street, but the line rang without any answer. Maybe they'd left town, too. She found some crackers in her cupboard, sat at her empty kitchen table with her laptop, and began to pore over her work. The coffee was strong and dark, since she was out of cream, but she savored it regardless. Over 1,000 people were missing in her state alone, but in California there was no waiting period required to report someone missing. Most of these would be overzealous parents calling in a kid who'd elected to smoke weed behind school before going home from football practice, or custody battle children. She'd need to filter them better, so Kendra spent the next hour finding the list from the news the other night. She cross-referenced them, marking off the spreadsheet she'd begun building with occupation, age, and location last seen, along with home addresses and places of employment. By the time the sun had shifted enough for the room to grow dim, she'd hacked the list of over 1,000 down to under 100. Much better. Her gut was telling her something seriously fishy was going on, and no part of her thought this many people with families and great careers would disappear at the same time. She was going to get to the bottom of it. Kendra's eyes snapped open as someone beat on her door. "Hold on!" She snatched her gun and holster from the side table, pulling the Glock free. She walked to the entrance and peered through the viewer. She slid the lock open and stepped to the side, letting Mrs. Foster in. She was a flurry of leopard print and red dyed hair.
"Kendra, what are you still doing here?"
she asked. Her voice had the rasp only a woman who'd smoked for 50 years could pull off.
"Mrs. Foster, I live here."
"You know what I mean. I told you God was going to smite us, didn't I? Didn't I?"
Mrs. Foster asked loudly.
"You did.
On several occasions, I could ask you the same thing," Kendra said.
"The same thing?
What are you doing here?"
Kendra turned the question around on the old lady. Mrs. Foster lit up a long, skinny cigarette, and Kendra didn't stop her.
"I'm leaving. I saw your car in the parking lot. Almost everyone is gone. They're evacuating the city,"
she spouted.
"Not yet. It's recommended, but not official," Kendra said.
"Nothing but semantics, my dear."
Mrs. Foster headed for the fridge and frowned when she found it empty. She shut the door with a slam and spun to face Kendra.
"Come with me."
"What?"
"I said come with me. I have a nephew in Oklahoma, says it'll be safe there.
Safe as we can be, anyway,
Mrs. Foster said. Her oversized plastic-framed glasses slipped on her nose, and she pushed them up, blinking quickly as she waited for a reply.
I can't,
Kendra pointed at the desk full of papers and the glowing laptop screen.
I'm in the middle of a big case, and these people's lives are more important than mine.
Mrs. Foster made a tisking sound and shook her head, grabbing Kendra by the shoulders.
Sweetie, you have to take care of yourself first. You can't help people if you're in the middle of the ocean.
Kendra didn't know what to say.
Last chance.
Mrs. Foster moved for the door. She nodded to the bag from L.A. full of dirty clothes.
I see you already packed a bag.
Have a good trip. I'll see you soon.
Kendra noticed the grim look on her elderly neighbor's face and shut the door as the lady slid into a running minivan. Kendra pushed the looming dread aside and returned to work. She made notes of where she would visit tomorrow, starting with the university near her house.
6. Andrew. 8 days left. The door to Andrew's jail cell swung open with a groan of rusty hinges.
Miller? It's time to go. You made bail,
the overweight, bespectacled guard said. Andrew waved goodbye to the guy on the top bunk, a little-known actor arrested for a DUI, and nodded to a few of the others on his way out. There were at least 30 people sharing his cell, all on misdemeanor offenses and bunking together while they awaited trial. Andrew had been unable to convince a bondsman to post bail for him because apparently his boss had decided to fire him when he'd failed to show up for work on Saturday morning. Instead of waiting for a trial, which could take weeks, he'd called Selena about a dozen times over the past 36 hours to convince her to pay his bail. Evidently, one of those calls had finally convinced her. Andrew walked ahead of the guard down a long gray hall to the elevators. This jail had 9 different levels, with all of the most dangerous criminals concentrated in the lower ones. On his way out, Andrew signed for his personal belongings and got dressed. The guard escorting him swiped his key card at 2 separate security doors that buzzed loudly as heavy locks slid away. On the other side of the second door, Andrew met his ex-wife.
Thanks, Sil. She cut him off with a wave of her hand.
Save it.
The guard behind the bulletproof glass in the receiving area buzzed the front doors, and Selena burst out into blinding sunlight. Andrew felt stupid following her down the steps wearing his PJs and Nikes.
Do you have any idea how dangerous what you did was?
Selena hissed as they crossed the parking lot together.
You could have killed someone. You could have killed Val.
A painful lump rose in Andrew's throat, but he forced it down.
Selena, there really was a burglar. I swear I saw him. I didn't imagine it.
Selena stopped and turned to him with her arms crossed over her chest.
You saw him like you see me now, or like when you see the faces of the guys from your old unit?
Andrew narrowed his eyes at her. That's not fair.
No, what's not fair is that your daughter loves you and now she's scared of you. That's what's not fair. You need to get your shit together before you lose her, too.
Andrew flinched at those words. A roundhouse slap would have hurt him less.
I'll fix it. I'll talk to her.
Selena shook her head.
She doesn't want to talk to you.
Whirling away from him, she crossed the rest of the way to her Mercedes. When they reached the car, she rounded on him again from the driver's side door.
Were you drunk?
What? He blinked in shock and then pulled out the green chip dangling from his neck.
I'm 90 days sober.
90 days. That's only 3 months, Andy. I might believe you if it was 3 years.
Screw you.
Selena smirked.
I'm not yours to screw anymore, remember?
She yanked her door open and ducked inside.
You made sure of that.
Andrew got in on the passenger's side and glared at his ex while she backed out of the parking space. On the way to his place, she scolded him a few more times, but his pulse was pounding so loudly that her lectures fell on deaf ears. She pulled up in front of his house.
Thanks for the ride and bail, he said. I'll pay you back.
Don't bother. Just get rid of the gun and fix things with your daughter.
The police have my gun. One of them, anyway, Andrew amended to himself.
Good.
Andrew slammed the door and stood watching as Selena drove away. He felt furious and depressed at the same time. When she was gone, he dragged his gaze away up to his crumbling bungalow. How the hell was he going to pay the rent without a job? Forget rent, how was he going to pay a lawyer to defend him on those charges? Leaden feet carried him up the path to his front door. The damaged pane of glass gleamed in the morning sun as he turned his key to unlock the door. He pushed his recently stitched hand carefully through the hole in the door, wondering if maybe he really had broken it himself while chasing an imaginary burglar. But how could he have opened that door if he were sleepwalking? Or, for that matter, have fired his gun? It didn't seem possible. Andrew went inside and stalked across the blood-smeared floor to fetch his wallet from his bedroom. On his way back, he snagged his car keys from the rack beside the coat closet. Before he'd even fully admitted to himself what he was doing, he was parking in front of the liquor store, walking in, and then whipping out his credit card to pay for a bottle of single malt scotch. Soon after that, he was lying on his couch, chugging straight from the bottle. Sweet warmth flooded his veins, and he grew blissfully numb. A world of tension bled out of him, and gradually all of his troubles faded to black. The last thing he registered was the bottle falling from his slack hand to the living room rug with a hollow thump. After what felt like only a few minutes, he awoke to the sound of his phone vibrating noisily against his keys on the coffee table. He stirred and shook his head. An instant pounding headache was the result. His mouth was so dry that it took a second for him to pry his tongue from the roof of his mouth. He leaned over the couch to catch a glimpse of his phone. It was Selena. He made a sloppy grab for the phone, missed, and knocked his keys off the table. The second attempt was a success.
"Hello,"
he croaked.
"Andy, Val is missing."
He sat up, feeling suddenly sober. "Missing how?"
"She went to a friend's house to study this morning, but she never came home."
Andrew rubbed his face and scratchy eyes with the hand not holding his phone. Then he glanced about to get his bearings. It was dark outside. He checked his watch. 22:08.
"Andrew, did you hear what I said?"
Selena pressed.
"Yeah, I heard you. She's been missing for, what, 12 hours? Did you call the friend's house?"
"Of course I called. They said she never arrived. They thought maybe she changed her mind. What if it's related to all of the other people who are going missing? What if it's some crazy serial killer or some kind of doomsday cult?"
"What other people?" Andrew demanded.
"Haven't you been watching the news?"
"You know I don't."
"Well, get your head out of the sand. There are hundreds of people missing all over the country."
"Hundreds?"
Andrew whispered.
"Yes."
Selena's voice was muffled now. She was sobbing into the phone.
"I need you here, Andy. Mike doesn't think it's anything. He assumes she's out with a boy. He doesn't know Val like we do. She's not like that."
"I'll be right there," Andrew said and hung up the phone.
The door of Mike's mansion swung open and Selena ran out into his arms. Mike stood in the doorway behind her, sipping brown liquor from a crystal tumbler.
"What are we going to do?"
Selena whispered and sniffled loudly in his ear. Andrew wrapped his arms around her in a hug and shook his head. He'd been wondering that same thing on the drive over.
"We'll find her," he said in a voice that sounded more confident than he felt.
Selena nodded against his shoulder.
"You mind letting go of my wife?"
Mike growled. Andrew scowled at him, but Selena stepped back and Andrew let his arms slide away from her. Mike smiled insipidly.
"Thanks." "Have you called the police yet?" Andrew asked. Selena bit her lip and shook her head.
"It hasn't even been 24 hours,
Mike burst out. "In fact, I don't even think it's been 12.
Andrew stared hard at the man. He looked ridiculous with his baby-smooth, surgically tightened face and thinning hair dyed a bright blonde that he probably couldn't have pulled off in his 20s, let alone at 47.
A vain, shallow man struggling to hold on to his youth.
Turning his attention to Selena, he said, "Are you coming? We have to make a report." Selena nodded quickly. Mike snorted. "Have fun."
You'll excuse me if I don't join you. I have a surgery tomorrow morning.
Andrew grabbed Selena's arm and pulled her gently away from the entrance and Mike's toxic influence. Mike's eyes blazed as he stared at Andrew's hand on Selena's arm. A flash of satisfaction coursed through Andrew with that.
She was mine before she was yours, buddy.
Back in the truck, they raced down the highway to the local Malibu police precinct. The GPS app on Andrew's phone said it was in Calabasas. It was hard to believe he'd been there watching a movie with Val only a couple of days ago. He should have kept her safe, but he'd been in jail, so how could he? Andrew recalled the crime he was accused of and the police's assumptions that he'd imagined the whole incident with the burglar. The pieces clicked into place then, and his jaw dropped.
It wasn't a burglar, he said.
What?
Selena turned to him, her eyes glassy in the dark. Streetlights strobed orange through the windows.
That guy who broke into my place, it wasn't a burglar. 10 to 1 he was after Val. He must have followed us from Malibu or even from the theater. Whoever it was, he's probably been stalking her for some time already.
Selena's hands flew to her mouth and she shook her head in silent horror.
Yeah, Andrew nodded to himself. He broke into my place because there's less security, but he had to assume I was there. God knows what would have happened to me if I hadn't heard him in the hall.
Did he have a gun?
Andrew frowned as he struggled to remember.
If he did, he didn't use it. He just ran.
But that should help us find her, right? We know who did it.
No, we don't. The police didn't believe me because there was no sign of the intruder, and I didn't see his face because he was wearing a ski mask.
There has to be something we can do.
Yeah, Andrew said, already turning over options in his head, working the problem.
He pulled off the highway and parked in the lot in front of the police station. Selena ran inside the station ahead of him. He found her screaming at the policewoman behind the desk. The woman stared blandly back at her, waited for her to finish, and then pushed a form through the slot in the bulletproof window.
Fill this out, and the detective will see you as soon as possible.
How soon?
As soon as possible.
We need to see a detective now. My girl is missing. Do you understand me? She's missing. They broke into her father's house and tried to take her on Friday night, but when he tried to report it, you arrested him instead of taking the incident seriously.
The woman behind the glass blinked once.
Fill out the report, ma'am. We'll be with you as soon as we can.
Andrew pulled Selena away by her shoulders before she could fly through the glass. They sat on a plastic bench and leaned against the cinder block wall. Selena's hands were shaking too badly to fill out the form, so Andrew took over. Half an hour later, they were sitting in front of Detective Alan Stiles, recounting everything that had happened so far. The man sat quietly and listened to their story, stolid, but for the occasional twitch of the thick, black caterpillar sitting on his lip. When Andrew mentioned the break-in at his house, the detective pulled up the report from that night on his computer and scanned it with a furrowed brow.
Says here you were charged with negligent discharge. You fired once inside your home, and then once more from the front porch.
How is that relevant?
Selena demanded. The detective shrugged.
I'm simply reading aloud, ma'am. The report doesn't help us. Even if the intruder was real, and he was the one who later took your daughter, we have nothing to go on. Unless you found some new evidence from the break-in, we're going to have to start from scratch.
Fine. But what are you going to do about it?
Selena demanded.
What are you going to do to find my little girl?
Alan laced his hands together and leaned across his desk toward them.
I'm going to be honest with you. We have over a dozen missing people in this county alone. All of them within the past few weeks, and with everything else that's going on, I'd be surprised if we're not all evacuated from the coast in a few days. That's not enough time to do much.
Andrew blinked in shock. The detective regarded him with a grim smile.
He seemed surprised.
Andrew shook his head. Maybe he needed to start watching the news, or at least start talking to people.
It's that serious?
He'd felt the tremors, but when weren't there tremors in California?
Alan nodded slowly. The San Andreas fault line is bucking like a dog in heat,
and there are so many earthquakes going off under Yellowstone that every damn geologist has crawled out from under their rocks to say that she's going to blow her top in a matter of days. According to the eggheads, the only part of the country that's going to be even halfway safe is Texas. Andrew could feel the blood draining from his face. Yellowstone and the San Andreas? Yeah, it's a perfect effing storm, and the rest of the world is experiencing it too. Somehow it's all coming together at once. This is the big one. The big D, as in Doomsday. The apocalypse. Selena jabbed a finger at the nameplate on the detective's desk.
Is that yours?
The man's brow furrowed and his mustache twitched. Yes.
It can't be, because that plaque says detective and you're clearly a news reporter.
Alan Stiles leaned back in his chair and crossed his arms over his chest. Well, ma'am, you can pretend that the end of the world shouldn't stop me from doing my job, but the reality is, if everything we're hearing is even halfway right, you'll probably find out that your daughter is missing because she was taken by the Rapture. Selena's eyes flashed.
You're useless.
We'll look into her disappearance, but there really isn't enough time to solve a case like this one, Detective Stiles said. My advice is that you forget about her and save yourselves. I'm sorry if that sounds callous, but it's the truth. Andrew's blood was boiling. He didn't trust himself not to reach across that desk, yank the man out of his chair, and beat the life out of him, so he grabbed Selena and pulled her up as he stood. Thanks for your time, he said quickly, then turned and walked briskly away. Selena wasn't doing much better than he was. Her whole body was trembling with rage as they left.
Did you hear that? They're not going to do a damn thing, she said.
Andrew nodded to her as they left the police station and crossed the parking lot to his truck. Maybe they won't, but I will.
How?
Selena cried. I need you to take me to the friend's house. Andrew parked in front of the house, another Malibu mansion. Streetlights flickered as he and Selena crossed the street. Andrew spent a moment looking around. Sports cars and mansions lined both sides of the street, which curved away sharply beneath them, a winding street leading to the beach. Which way to Mike's place from here? Selena pointed down the hill. There weren't any alternate routes to take, so Andrew nodded and started for the sidewalk. Selena hurried to keep up with him. He was walking fast, but his eyes were everywhere, scanning the sidewalk, the street, the hedges and driveways, parked cars. It wasn't long before Selena was panting in exhaustion. She wasn't a gym rat like him. The restless energy of a frustrated addict is great fuel for workouts. How much farther? Andrew asked.
A few blocks. What are we doing?
Assuming we're right and Val was telling the truth about going to her friend's house to study, then she came this way. We're retracing her steps.
How does that help?
I don't know yet. They walked on, winding down the hill for another block. Andrew began to think he was wasting his time. This was a dead end, just like the ski-masked burglar. But then he saw it, lying in the dirt beneath a flowering hedge, gleaming gold in the vermilion glow of a streetlight. He bent to retrieve it, a 50-caliber round. He held it up for Selena to see. It wasn't real, of course. It was the novelty pen that Andrew had bought for Val when he took her to the shooting range for her 14th birthday. There was an inscription on it that read, HBD number 14, love Dad. She dropped this, he said. Selena's hand flew to her mouth.
But how does that help us find her?
It means this is where she was taken, he said. Selena made a strangled noise in the back of her throat. Andrew turned away from her, his head on a swivel, checking their surroundings. There were houses on only one side of the street. The other side was a cliff, a hairpin bend with only three houses in sight. Whoever had taken Val had chosen this spot for its relative isolation, fewer potential witnesses.
We need to ask the neighbors if they saw anything, Andrew said, already stalking up the driveway of the nearest home.
You can't just go knocking on people's doors in the middle of the night,
Selena objected.
Sure I can.
Andrew reached the door and banged on it half a dozen times with his fist. Dogs began barking from the house next door. The frosted glass windows flanking the door lit up with a golden light, and then they heard footsteps.
Go away or I'm calling the cops,
someone yelled through the door.
My daughter's missing, Andrew yelled back. She disappeared yesterday morning in front of your house.
He pulled his phone out of his pocket. The background was a picture of Val, so he simply touched the power button and placed the phone to the peephole.
Did you see her?
Please,
Selena added.
We're just trying to find her.
Mrs. Lewis?
The muffled voice asked.
Yes, is that...
Selena's brow furrowed.
Bill?
The door swung open and Bill stood in the entrance, wearing nothing but fuzzy slippers, boxer shorts, and the white hair on his chest. He regarded them with bleary eyes.
I'm sorry, I haven't seen Valeria, he said, shaking his head.
Are you sure? Andrew pressed, leaning around Bill to get a glimpse inside his house.
We found her pen in front of your house in the bushes. She must have dropped it when she was taken.
Bill frowned and shook his head.
I'm sorry, but I wasn't even here yesterday.
Suddenly suspicious, Andrew took a step toward the man.
Do you mind if we take a look inside?
What? No, I'm sorry. The door swung shut and caught on Andrew's foot.
It'll only take a second, he said.
Get your foot out of my door before I break it off and shove it up your... Andrew cut him off with a burst of laughter. Selena pulled him back.
I'm sorry to have bothered you, Bill.
The door slammed and locked in their faces. Andrew rounded on her.
Hey.
Bill didn't take her.
How can you be so sure?
Because he has no reason to, and he's almost 70. Val would have beaten him within an inch of his life if he'd tried to abduct her.
She was right. Damn it.
Andrew stood listening to the dogs barking next door.
What about that house?
He pointed to it. Selena shook her head.
I don't know them.
Time to change that.
Andrew ran back up Bill's driveway and crossed over to the house next door. Again, he hammered on the door with his fist. This time the lights didn't snap on and no one spoke to them through the door. It just swung open to reveal a middle-aged man in a monogrammed robe pointing a shotgun at them.
Who are you and what do you want?
He demanded. This time Selena explained. Andrew showed the picture of Val again and the man lowered his shotgun.
I think I might have seen her.
Andrew's heart skipped in his chest.
When? Where?
Just down the street. I was out walking my dogs. On my way up the hill, I saw her walking up ahead of me, but she wasn't alone. There was a young man in a black hoodie accompanying her.
Did you see his face?
Selena asked.
They had their backs to me, but it seemed like they knew each other. He had long blonde hair and a ponytail.
So how do you know I wasn't a girl?
Andrew asked.
Broad shoulders, masculine walk. I guess he could have been a girl, though. Tough to tell these days.
Then what happened?
Selena asked.
Nothing, the man said. They walked around the corner together, and I lost sight of them. By the time I got here, they were both gone.
Shit,
Andrew muttered.
I did see a car come down, though. Maybe not related, but it was,
the man's brow furrowed as he recalled.
Black, yes, definitely black. A Tesla, I think, tinted windows.
Did you catch a glimpse of the driver or the plate?
Andrew asked.
No, sorry. I wasn't really paying that much attention.
This is already a lot to go on. Thank you,
Andrew said.
You've been a big help.
You're welcome.
The door swung shut, and Andrew started jogging up the driveway. Selena kept pace beside him.
So we're looking for a boy with long blonde hair?
Yes.
But that could be anyone.
Doesn't sound like someone you know from around here,
Andrew asked. One of the neighbor's kids? Selena shook her head.
Probably a friend from school, then. We need to find her friends on social media. Maybe find someone who can hack into her accounts.
Selena was huffing beside him, struggling to keep up as he ran up the hill to his truck.
I can do it,
she said. He glanced at her.
You?
I installed a backdoor app on her computer and her phone. It gives me access to everything.
Nice job.
A thought occurred to him.
Does the software track her phone?
No.
Pity.
Do you think the blonde-haired kid abducted her?
Selena asked between gasps for air.
Maybe. Or maybe he's working with whoever did. The bait. And even if he's not involved, he was probably the last person to see Val before she was taken, so he might have seen something.
What if we can't find him? Or what if whoever it was took them both?
Andrew grimaced. Then we find the kid's parents and see what they know.
But what if they don't know anything?
Andrew stopped running. He grabbed Selena by her shoulders and turned her to face him.
Stop it. You're spinning.
We'll find her if it's the last thing we do.
Selina nodded, her eyes wide. It was a poor choice of words. She didn't say anything, but he could tell that she was remembering what the detective had said about the news and the looming disasters. At this rate, finding Val might actually be the last thing they ever did.
7. Roland. 7 days left.
2 days. Roland had stayed at the house for another 2 days, and he was regretting it. His messages to Pied Piper 19 had gone unanswered, and he was done waiting. If something big was happening in 7 days, he wasn't going to be holed up in his grandmother's house. He had to act. Roland didn't know why he was doing this, but he needed to reach Cape Town to find out what was at the end of the rainbow he'd discovered. Someone was in that warehouse, building something, but what? A boat? An underwater city? Cape Town was half a day's drive from here, and with the current conditions outside, he had no idea how long that would translate to. He'd watched countless feeds of news footage showing everyone getting out of Dodge. It was pandemonium out there. Last night, the air had been riddled with gunshots and sirens, and he doubted today would be any different. No, he was kidding himself. Things were about to get worse. With the ever-growing fear of the coming maelstroms, the public was scared. The wealthy were the first to leave, as always. The poor, who relied on food stamps and public transportation, were left behind to fend for themselves. It was over a week away from happening, but already, conditions were worsening across the world. If ever there was a world-ending event, it was coming. Roland was sure of it. He'd be heading up the coast like a madman while everyone else traveled inland. He hoped this meant smooth sailing on the highways. Roland scanned the map of Cape Town again, agreeing that this really was the perfect place to build. It was out of the way, hours from any real cities, nothing but empty coast for miles and miles. A person could do a lot out there without prying eyes. It was the exact spot someone like Lewis Hound would use for a foundation.
"He's built his survival shelter, and I'm going to find it," Roland said to himself as he crossed the living room.
It was messier than ever. He'd managed to eat everything in the place, and empty water bottles littered the floor. His grandmother would be so upset with him. She'd loved to keep it clean. Roland missed her. She was the only person who'd shown him kindness, through and through. His own parents had thought he was a waste of breath, but she'd always protected him, had taken him in, and when she died, she'd left him the house. He still could hardly believe it. The lawyer had estimated the place was worth $1.5 million, and that was 5 years ago. He doubted it was worth anything now, though, and soon it would be sinking to the bottom of the ocean. His bags were partially packed, but there were a few loose ends he needed to take care of before he left. He found a box of garbage bags and began to clear the debris from the living room. The least he could do was clean up, in a final gesture of thanks to his grandmother. Soon, 4 bags were filled to the brim, and he wiped his hands, moving for the patio door. The entire house was stuffy, and he wanted to air it out. For the first time in years, Roland threw the curtains completely to the side and stepped out onto the deck. The sun was high in the sky, occasionally piercing through gray clouds as they rolled along with purpose. The ocean churned in the distance. A few boats were out there, as if running that direction was going to help anyone survive. Roland had witnessed the simulations on the news. He placed a hand over his eyes as a visor, noticing an unmarked white van on the street below his property line. A momentary panic coursed through him, and the van fired up its engine, pulling away. Sunlight glared off the windows, and he couldn't see the occupants. The van left, and Roland rushed inside. They were here for him.
"They aren't here for you, Raleigh. It's just a coincidence. There are a lot of vans out there,"
he told himself out loud, hoping to calm his fears. It didn't work. He'd been paranoid his whole life, feeding himself a constant stream of conspiracy theories and digging where he shouldn't. He knew too much, and there were probably a half dozen agencies out there that were searching for him, or at least for his online moniker.
"Get it together!"
he shouted and took a deep breath. Computers. They were a priority.
He unlocked the drawer, pulling his pill bottles out. He swallowed two pills from the second bottle to the right and reached into the deep part of the open drawer, pulling out a black box. It had a scanner on it, and he used his thumb, pressing it firmly on the small square. It flashed green and clicked open. A shiny metallic thumb drive with chrome finishing sat inside. He flipped it around in his hand and pressed it into the desktop computer. A window popped up, and he confirmed he wanted to use the drive. A bar appeared on each monitor displaying the progress. Everything he'd ever worked on, his entire 12-year obsession, was being wiped away by the worm. It ate all of it, tracing his movements through the internet, both public and dark, as well as clearing anything saved to a cloud. The entire process took only 20 minutes, and he was sweating bullets by the end. Roland grabbed his laptop and shoved it into the pack with his clothes. He could access everything he needed from the portable computer and was glad he wasn't cut off completely. Most of his life had been spent online, and there was no way he could go cold turkey. Not yet.
You can do this.
Roland's pep talks rarely worked, but today it sparked hope in his chest. He was at the door, pack in hand, car keys in the other, when the idea struck him. The gun. He needed the gun. He rushed downstairs, flicking the light on. He'd only been down here a handful of times since his grandmother passed away, and it was full of all her old furniture. He hadn't been able to live in the house with it stored upstairs, not when he could picture her sitting on the floral print couch watching daytime television with a smile on her face. He pushed it all aside and moved through the blanket-covered curio cabinets and stacks of dishware. He found the gun cabinet where it had always stood, ever since he was an inquisitive little boy. He recalled the code, emblazoned in his brain along with so many other numbers and facts. He pressed the numbers, 3, 7, 4, 9, and it opened. Inside sat a rifle and a handgun, an old 9mm pistol. He took the handgun, made sure it wasn't loaded, and grabbed the box of ammo before running upstairs. With a final moment of silence for the house he'd called home the last 20 years, he opened the door and saw the van parked in the driveway. A man and woman stepped out, slamming the door shut. They were in suits, and Roland didn't think they planned to spread the good word. He slammed the door just as he caught the flash of steel in the man's hand. They were coming to kill him. All those years of believing he was crazy, it was all true. Someone had found him, and they were going to end him. He needed to escape and somehow reach Cape Town. He bolted the door shut and ran to the patio, chucking the pack to the grass below. He wasn't athletic, but he managed to climb over the railing and dangle toward the ground. With a deep breath, he dropped, his ankles rolling as they hit the grass. He fell to his side, the gun jostling from his belt. He snatched it, took the pack, and crouched beside the house. He could hear them knocking on the door, and it quickly escalated. That sound could only be the big guy trying to kick the door open. Roland moved faster than he imagined he could, rushing along the untrimmed hedges that lined the property. He glanced toward the front of the house and saw the woman was missing. Roland kept moving to his car, which he always left parked on the street. He didn't want it seen in the driveway and didn't trust it in the garage, where he could easily become boxed in. At that moment, he was glad for all his paranoia and foresight. Roland fumbled with his keys, dropping them as he reached the driver's door. The car was old, a classic from before the era of computers and key fobs. He twisted the key in the rusty lock and slid inside, peering at the rearview mirror. The woman was running toward him. Roland turned the key, the engine struggling to fire up.
"Come on, damn you, start!"
he shouted, and it turned over, rumbling to life. A black cloud erupted from the tailpipe as he raced away. Gunshots rang out, and he ducked, trying to avoid the other cars on the side of the road. Another shot, and the rear windshield was hit, spiderwebbing on the passenger side. Soon he was down the block, speeding away from his home. 8. Andrew. 7 days left. Andrew and Selena stayed up all night, snooping through their daughter's accounts on both Facebook and Instagram. Selena's nosy parent app provided the passwords they needed to access both accounts. Now, over 4 hours later, the sky was bright with the morning, and they were both ready to give up. All of the blonde-haired guys on her accounts had short hair, not shoulder length.
There were plenty of girls with shoulder-length blonde hair, though. Andrew began to wonder about that. Maybe that neighbor really had mistaken the kid in the black hoodie for a boy. He started checking girls' profiles one by one. Selena stood up and began pacing her living room, biting her nails. The ocean looked angry in the distance behind her. Andrew could tell that those waves had to be massive.
The surfers must be happy.
Andrew shook himself out of his distraction. The crazy weather wasn't his concern right now, finding Val was.
"What else can we do?"
Selena asked.
"We keep searching until we find something," Andrew insisted, scrolling mindlessly through his daughter's Instagram feed on his phone.
"We've been at it for hours. There's no one matching that boy's description."
"There has to be. Because Val knew whoever it was that she was walking with."
"Maybe they weren't friends on social media,"
Andrew snorted.
"What?"
"You're talking about the wrong generation. They were definitely connected online."
"Then we're missing something,"
Selena decided.
"Yes."
"I can't keep my eyes open,"
Selena said.
"You want some coffee?"
Andrew nodded absently and waved her away. She returned a few minutes later with two steaming cups and handed one to him. There was a suspicious soapy cap of foam floating on top of his.
"What's this?"
he asked, sniffing at it suspiciously.
"A cappuccino."
"Thanks."
He took a sip and grimaced.
She must have dumped the whole sugar bowl in his cup.
Selena had obviously forgotten that he liked his coffee black. She leaned over his shoulder.
"What are you looking for?"
"A girl."
"But the neighbor said..."
"That he was too far away to be certain. Lots of girls have shoulders wider than their hips. Add a manly walk to that, a tomboy maybe, and we have our guy, so to speak."
Selena pulled up a chair and sat down beside him. He went on scrolling, taking periodic sips of his coffee, despite the tongue-curling taste of it.
"Wait!"
Selena grabbed his wrist suddenly.
"Go back up."
He did as she asked, then stopped and stared. It was a photo of Val and a girl with shoulder-length blonde hair. Val was blowing a kiss to the camera while making bunny ears behind the girl. A girl wearing a black hoodie.
"Jackpot,"
he whispered. The name tagged in the photo was @Anna_Claremont. Selena reached past him and tapped a shaking finger on the girl's name to check her profile. A few useless lines of emojis and text appeared to describe her profile. Things like, "California girl," followed by three heart emojis.
"It doesn't say where she lives,"
Selena said. Andrew shrugged.
"Maybe it doesn't have to."
He checked at least a dozen photos from the girl's account, looking for a location tag. Nothing. Maybe she was taking internet stalking seriously. Then he had a thought and set the phone aside in favor of Selena's laptop. A quick search of Val's friends on Facebook found an Adriana Claremont, and one glimpse at Adriana's photos revealed she was the same girl. Unlike the Instagram account, there were some real, meaningful details about Adriana's life on Facebook.
"She lives in Santa Monica,"
Selena said.
"Yeah, nothing more specific, though. We're going to have to dig a little deeper. Did you find any messages on her WhatsApp from someone with a name like Anna or Adriana?"
Andrew turned to his ex. She was blinking rapidly, staring off into the distance with a faraway look in her eyes.
"Maybe. I don't know. She was talking to at least 100 people on there."
"Well, go check,"
Andrew snapped. Selena got up and ran to fetch her iPhone from the opposite end of the dining room table. She sat down and began swiping through messages. Meanwhile, Andrew busied himself by clicking through Adriana Claremont's friends. He found a Justin Claremont listed as her brother and clicked on his name. Maybe he'd have more details listed in his bio.
"Hey, I think I found something. There's a conversation here from someone called Miss C. Mont."
"That sounds right." Andrew jumped up and ran over to C.
"Look,"
Selena prompted. He read over her shoulder as she scrolled through recent messages between Miss C. Mont and their daughter. Miss C. Mont.
"Hey, girl, Justin is coming back from uni this weekend. You have to come out with us."
Val Miller.
"I'm there. When? Where?"
Miss C. Mont.
"No deets yet. I'll let you know."
Val Miller.
"Great."
Smile emoji. Miss C. Mont.
"Better make him your bae before some slutty uni girl does."
Winking emoji.
"He's in university?"
Andrew thundered.
"Just keep reading,"
Selena urged. Val Miller. Well, if that's what he wants, I'm going to be a real disappointment.
Miss Seamont.
You're such a slug. When are you going to give up your V-card anyway?
Val Miller.
Gotta wait for the right mister.
Miss Seamont.
Whatever, is Chetsun Bay.
Val Miller.
Call me Bay.
Wink emoji. Andrew and Selena stared at each other. That's it? He asked.
That was the last message.
Did she call? Selena flipped over to a call log report and scanned it briefly before nodding.
Yes, one call from Miss C right before...
She clapped a hand to her mouth and shook her head.
This was only an hour before she left for her friend's house.
What did she say? Selena scowled.
It's a spy app, not the FBI.
Right. Andrew returned to the computer. Maybe their parents have their number listed in a public directory.
Yeah, because they're 80 years old.
Selena scoffed. Hey, my number is listed.
Forget it. No one lists their number anymore. Try checking her brother's accounts. Maybe you can find out where his parents live.
I already checked, Andrew said, shaking his head.
Show me.
Andrew clicked over to Justin's Facebook page and checked the About section of his profile. See? Selena reached over his shoulder and stole the mouse from him. She scrolled through the About section to Family Members. Three names were listed: Rick Claremont, Adriana Claremont, and Tina Claremont. She clicked on Tina, and a middle-aged woman appeared. Her About page listed a real address: 238 Hill Street, Santa Monica, California.
Parents are the worst about listing their real addresses. They never stop to think that a stalker might dig more than one level deep,
Selena said. A stalker like you? Andrew asked. She smiled tightly at him.
I'm the worst.
I believe you, he said. Her eyes flashed with hurt, but they both dropped the topic there. We have an address, Andrew said, standing up from the table. Let's go. Selena drained her cappuccino and they hurried out the door. They found Anna's house on Andrew's GPS app. The drive from Malibu to Santa Monica was suspiciously quiet. The streets were deserted. It should have been rush hour, but instead it was smooth sailing. It was as if there really had been a rapture. Andrew parked out front of Anna's house and ran up the walkway with Selena. They reached the door and Andrew pounded on it with his fist. Selena gave him a sharp look and then touched a finger to the doorbell. Oops, he thought, and flashed a charming grin at her. The grin gradually fell off his face when no one answered the door.
What if they evacuated already?
Selena asked. Andrew didn't have an answer ready for that. If they'd evacuated, then this was a dead end, and they were going to have a hard time dredging up another lead. Selena pressed the doorbell again, and then 10 times more, stabbing it repeatedly with her finger. The door swung open a minute later to reveal a haggard-looking man with thinning blonde hair and glasses. His face was drawn, eyes dull and empty. What? He asked in a dull voice. He didn't sound angry that they'd interrupted him with about 1,000 dings of his bell. This had to be Rick Claremont. Selena spoke before Andrew could.
Our daughter is missing, and I noticed that the last person who called her was...
Yours too? Rick asked. Andrew felt his eyes narrowing. What do you mean, yours too? Anna is missing? How do you know her name? Rick asked. Not important, Andrew said. What can you tell us?
Not much.
Rick sighed and raked a hand through his hair.
The police were no help. They said we should evacuate and forget about her.
Andrew snorted and scowled at the memory of his meeting with Detective Stiles.
Us too.
Mind if we come in? He asked. The man's wife walked up behind him. Tina, Andrew recalled.
Rick, who is it?
She sounded like she'd been crying. Rick half turned to her. The woman's mascara was running down her cheeks in sticky black gobs.
Some people looking for their daughter. They say she knows Anna.
How? Who are you?
Tina asked.
Maybe we should sit down for this, Andrew said. Do you mind?
Rick shrugged and stepped aside to let them in. Andrew and Selena walked into a beachy living room with a light, airy decor. White couches and rustic wooden furniture. Blue pillows, shells, starfish, model boats, and even a lighthouse decorated the room. Andrew and Selena sat on one of two couches facing each other across a rustic wooden coffee table with the word beach actually spelled out on it in big wooden letters. Mascara-streaked Tina was a tiny woman with platinum blonde hair, an oval face, and a stick-thin frame. Her collarbone popped out as she leaned forward.
"What do you know about our Anna?"
she asked.
"I was about to ask you the same thing about Val,"
Selina said. "They were going to meet up the day our girl disappeared," Andrew said. "The last call on Val's phone was from your daughter." Rick drew himself up and straightened his glasses.
"So you think Anna had something to do with her disappearance?"
"Not directly," Andrew said. "Whoever took Val obviously took your girl, too." Rick and Tina nodded along with that. Selina spoke next.
"Anna said her brother, your son, was coming home from San Diego. Justin?"
"Yes, that's right," Rick said.
"Well, Anna was talking about the three of them going out somewhere."
"And?"
Rick asked.
"And the weekend is over, so where's your son?"
Rick scowled.
"He didn't make it."
"Just like that? What excuse did he give?" "You mean besides half of the city evacuating?"
Tina demanded.
"I don't know. Maybe he had a party to go to?" "Look, all I'm saying is..."
Rick's eyes flashed.
"We know what you're saying. That our son is involved. You really think he would abduct his own sister?"
"That's not what I meant."
"I think you should leave,"
Tina put in.
"Don't you want to find out where Anna is?"
Selina asked.
"If you could help us find her, you wouldn't be here interrogating us."
Andrew grimaced. This was spiraling out of control.
"Look,"
just Rick jumped up and pointed at the door.
"Get out!"
"Please,"
Selina said. Tina stood up beside her husband.
"Now, before we call the police,"
Andrew smirked.
"Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a lot of help." "I have a gun," Rick said. "You want me to get it?"
Andrew held up his hands and began shuffling toward the door.
Okay, we're leaving."
They were halfway through the hall to the entrance when the floor began to shake.
"Earthquake!"
Tina screamed. She and her husband flew into the guest bathroom and slammed the door behind them, leaving Andrew and Selina to fend for themselves. Selina clutched Andrew's arm, her nails digging in. Picture frames on the walls shook, and Andrew had to steady himself on a table in the foyer to keep from falling over. Stunned, he stared at a blurry reflection of a ragged, bearded man in the mirror above the table. Then that mirror leapt off the wall, and he jumped away as it crashed at his feet.
"Come on, we have to get outside."
They ran for the door, and Andrew struggled to pull it open, cords standing out on his arms as he wrenched on the handle with everything he had. The frame was twisting along with everything else, making it impossible to open the door.